Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello.
Hello.
And there you go. You're supposed to introduce this one.
Sorry, we didn't sort out who was going to do that, did we? Shall I introduce this one?
Yes, you introduce this one. Go on then. Go. Hello.
Hello. You're listening to We Are History, the silly history podcast with me, Angela Barnes.
And me, John O'Farrell.
And John O'Farrell.
And
we
Angela
are doing, I don't know why I repeated that. You'd already
and
said it.
Angela Barnes.
And John, in fact, we're in an infinite loop. We can't get out. So, John, today's topic is one that you've chosen.
Indeed.
And it's about a time, John, when the marital affairs of the British royal family was in the news. Can you believe it?
It's incredible.
And that the idea of a divorced American marrying a British prince was scandalous and it utterly consumed the media. I mean, it's hard to imagine that now, right?
If you could see my Zoom call, listeners, irony is flashing up on Angela's screen.
The irony alarm is going off.
We are doing the abdication crisis of 1936. We sort of chose this because of what's been happening recently with Meghan Markle and Prince Harry. But in that news frenzy, the fact that Meghan Markle was divorced was not at all the issue, was it really?
No, in fact, I keep forgetting that she was married before. It doesn't seem to be the top line in any of the stories, really, does it?
And yet, in my parents' lifetime, the notion of a royal leaving the royal family and abandoning his duties because he had to choose between marrying the woman he loved, who was divorced, you know, or doing what, you know, the British establishment said, was the most all-consuming scandal of the year. And now no one cares. It's like, it seems the most ridiculous waste of energy.
The more you look into it, the more ridiculous it is. I mean, we obviously are going to look into it. That's sort of what we do.
Oh, yeah. So the book I read for this is quite a new book, actually. It's only out in hardback. £20 it cost me. I'm just saying
how
that,
much?
Angela. £20. I buy it from a bookshop, not from Amazon. But with the podcast, we'll make that back in the next couple of years. So
couple of years, you'll be lucky, mate.
we're
still losing money on this. Come on.
I read The Crowning Crisis by Alexander Larman. Which I recommend. Right, it's a good read, actually. It's a good slice of pre-war Britain and its sort of snobby values. And this is all about the accession of Edward VIII and his subsequent abdication in the same year, 3 years before the world was consumed by war. But so much was going on in the world in 1936, but the British establishment was only concerned with one thing.
These are your notes, John. This is your podcast.
I've done some research
episode
on this one, yeah.
Because, you know, if I'd researched it, we would have gone back to about 1700. But
it is
1936. It's 1936.
Mm-hmm.
Stanley Baldwin is Prime Minister for the third time.
Yes.
Tory.
Yeah, he's a bit of a sort of John Major, really, Baldwin. He's sort of a boring sort of, not many people remember much about him. He was slightly sort of held responsible for appeasing Hitler before Neville Chamberlain. But he was sort of like a manager and a sort of party unifier.
Yeah. So officially a coalition, but not really.
Yes, because Ramsay MacDonald, I think, was in the cabinet, the former Labour leader. Party had sort of imploded in 1931 or split apart. But lots going on.
Yep. Attlee is a new leader of the opposition. We are in the middle of Great Depression, massive unemployment, 1936 Spanish Civil War breaking out.
Oh,
there's a good podcast you can listen to about that. Isn't
there,
John?
What podcast is that, Angela?
Could be the We Are History podcast, John.
Oh, I've heard that's very good.
Apparently, it's like chatting to a couple of friends down the pub, which is nice.
So they never buy you a drink.
Never buy you a drink, which is just like being in the pub with a lot of my friends. So never mind all that, because there's more important things at home to focus on. So we're in the interwar period.
Yes.
It's 1936.
And the new king is seeing a married woman. Swoon. Never mind the Jarrow marches or the Nazis marching into the Rhineland or Mussolini in Abyssinia. This woman is divorcing her second husband. She is completely unsuitable for our king and head of our church. And you know, for the king to be the head of our church. So it's a massive deal.
Of all the things in 1936 to get your knickers in a twist about.
I know.
The fact that the king is in love with a woman who is getting divorced.
I know.
Anyway.
By modern
different
standards.
Times, John, different times. So we had George V. He's the one with the beard.
Oh, yes.
Right. He dies in January.
But did he die naturally, Angela?
Well,
did he pass
John,
away
that's
in his
the question,
sleep?
Isn't it?
No, he got a massive morphine shot from his doctor to finish him off quickly. Because if he died in the afternoon, it would have been the evening papers along with the racing results. And we can't have that. It had to be in the morning
times. Oh, no, that would be
times.
Terribly... no decorum so, in that, is there? There's quite a lot of controversy over his end, isn't there?
Yeah.
About whether his last words were... Well, it's supposed to be he's Bugger Bognor King.
Yeah, right? Well, they said maybe you should go to Bognor for your health. He sort of said, Bugger Bognor, and died, which I think is which is great last words.
It didn't happen, though, did it? By all accounts, it didn't happen.
Technically, he was killed, euthanized. Mm. Well, they said to make his parting less painful. But there is this idea that it would be more appropriate if his death was announced in the morning papers than in the evening news alongside the...
I mean... They could have just not put the racing... I mean, so many things they
I know,
could have done.
So many questions but anyway. So the Prince of Wales becomes yes. Edward VIII. Now, he'd been a very sort of dashing and popular Prince of Wales. Rather insecure. Mm-hmm. They think he had anorexia. Always wow. Very obsessive about his waist. And Wallis Simpson, the woman we're talking about here, famously said, you can neither be too rich nor too thin.
Oh, you can be both those things.
He wouldn't have gone for you, if I'm honest.
He would. No, I don't think I was his type, John, to be honest.
He was said to enjoy the company of society women.
Oh, maybe I was his type.
Yeah, society woman, Angela Barnes. Yes.
Why are you both laughing? Why?
Yeah, so he was having an affair with Lady Furness, apparently. And it was at one of her parties when he met Wallis Simpson, this American lady. Lady Furness... Right. Had to go to the United States. So she said to her best friend, will you look after the prince for me while I'm away?
Rookie error, that.
Basic
Never
mistake.
Leave your dashing prince in the hands of your best mate when you're away.
Yeah, so her best friend Wallis nicked her lover. Yeah. Apparently Furness was fine about it. But little postscript here. When Lady Furness dropped dead in a New York street in 1970, her handbag contained a little teddy bear that Edward had given her 40
oh,
years
before. She'd carried
before.
It all those years.
Oh, little Ted.
Oh, what a bastard. Anyway, but Mrs. Simpson, Wallis Simpson,
yes.
Who he's fallen for at this party, she's still married, right, to Ernest Simpson.
That's right.
That's not a glamorous name, is it, that? Ernest Simpson.
Ernest.
Sounds like
Ernest.
A local watchmaker or something.
It's like in the high street.
Yeah. So he's her second husband.
Mm-hmm.
But now Edward's fallen in love with her.
Now, there's all sorts of rumours that were put around about Wallis Simpson, probably by scurrilous, sort of nasty, you know, tabloid journalist type people, gossiping upper class snobs.
Could never happen today, could it?
Could never happen today. Rumours that she was born intersexual, both male right. and female sexual organs. Hard one right. to disprove, isn't it, Angela?
Yeah, and also... People are born intersex, so what?
I know, but, you know, it's not something you know, that you can go, come on, then prove it then. Come on.
Well, no.
Prove that you haven't got male and female genitals. I know we're in a busy pub.
Gives a whole new meaning to a gender reveal party, doesn't it?
Good. We're not going to get
you,
better than that.
You.
Let's stop
I'm
the podcast there. yes, Wallis claimed that neither of her first two marriages were consummated, which seems a bit steep. And that she never allowed anyone else to touch her below what she called her personal Mason-Dixie line.
We've all got one, John.
We've all got personal Mason-Dixie
We've all got
lines.
Personal Mason-Dixie line.
She spent a year. She spent a year in China in 1927, which was suggested was an odyssey of sexual discovery, where she learned her Oriental skills. Wink, wink.
Oriental skills.
Yeah, I think
it's
just blowjobs, if I'm honest. No, that's what's in the book. She confessed to visiting sing song houses in Shanghai.
What are they, John? Karaoke bars?
Angela, try and put yourself in 1930s sophisticated society, for goodness sake. Just give it a go.
Oh, God. Okay.
Yes, biographers said that sex meant a great deal to Edward and that Wallis was highly skilled in some unusual sexual techniques.
Biographers say that, I mean, I don't know. It's all just, it fits the myth, doesn't it? It fits the...
Well, it fits the sort of demonization of the woman
here. What a surprise.
Here,
a man and a woman, they like sex. Oh my God, what
I know,
a story.
But they made her a temptress, an evil temptress, haven't they? And
well,
I don't want to get all
it,
feminist on
women
here,
women who
Angela.
Liked sex in the 1930s were evil temptresses. You weren't allowed to like sex, were you, as a woman then?
But especially as a woman, yeah. So what they're doing is they're blaming the woman here, Angela. You've probably not encountered this before, but I'm going to tell you
no,
it happens
never,
a lot.
Never encountered that in my life. No.
I'm just giving you an education here on sexual
Thanks,
quality.
Thanks, John.
so, yeah, they said that Edward liked to be dominated by his mistresses.
Ooh, and
America
quite...
dominating Britain. They were just ahead of their time. So
yeah.
The day after he became king, she's photographed with Edward. And that's quite, oh, you know, he's out there. He's parading around with this married woman. But
So his father, George V,
yes.
They didn't get on, did they? Him and
no, he had quite a low opinion
Edward.
Of his son.
And he said to Stanley Baldwin, the Prime Minister, he said, after I'm dead, the boy will ruin himself in 12 months.
Wow.
Quite a prophecy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Especially as it actually only took 11.
That's pretty impressive, yeah. The king always preferred Bertie, who became, you know, our George VI.
Yeah.
And always thought he would have been better. And little Lilibet. And that's, of course, our Majesty.
Our little queen.
John Stans salutes. I'm doing this with the Union flag behind me, by the way.
Angela, oh, yeah, well, I've insisted, haven't I, John, that we always have the Union flag behind us now.
When we're doing these. So the king dies, King George V. This is how things happen in royal families. Queen Mary kissed her son's hand and said, this is like when your dad dies, okay?
Yeah.
Kissed her son's hand and said, the king is dead, long live the king. That's a bit weird, isn't it?
So your dad's dead,
yeah.
Now you're the king.
Yeah. So when my dad died, I rushed down to see my mum.
Mm-hmm.
And there were two policemen there because he died at home. So the police have to be informed. Mm-hmm. And I walk in and I go, Mum, you okay? She goes, this is my son. He was on Have I Got News For You? I was, not now, Mum.
Grief does strange things to people, John.
Mum, it's not the moment.
Oh, bless her.
I know. My dad's body was literally lying in the room. It's like...
Oh God, really early on in my comedy career, I got interviewed by Terry Wogan on the radio. Right,
brilliant.
I did a live show at the Savoy Theatre with him, and it was really amazing. And as far as my nan was concerned, I've been interviewed on Radio 2 by Terry Wogan. That means I'm now famous,
right?
And I mean, at this point, I'd done no telly, anything. And we went to took my nan for lunch with my mum, and my nan loved a harvester, right? And so we went to the harvester in Brighton, and this poor waitress was about, I don't know, she was about 16, 17, and she came out, and my nan just, like, she took my nan's order, and my nan went, this is my granddaughter, she's famous. And I just absolutely, and this good, poor girl just looked at me like, oh. And I was like, Nan, if I was famous, she wouldn't be looking at me like
I know,
that, would she? She didn't know who I was.
Bless them, they're so proud. But I suppose, Queen Mary's quite proud. She goes, oh my God, my son's king. My husband's king, now my son's king. This is they've done really well in my family by their own hard work. So so Edward, he didn't live in Buckingham Palace or anything like that. He lived at a place called Fort Belvedere, which was this sort of Gothic pile in Windsor Great Park. He sort of made it his own. And after a short break, he started seeing Wallace Simpson again, now as king, having her to stay.
So now he's king.
He's having little sleepovers with Wallace at Fort Belvedere. She stays for the weekend.
Now, by all accounts, he was a bit like a teenage boy in love for the first time.
Everyone
like
says this,
Wallace for Eddie over his exercise books.
Yes,
and,
that's right. He was like,
tattoos and...
Yes, Your Majesty, you're not the Prince of Wales anymore. Oh, Wales. Sounds a bit like Wallace, doesn't it? Oh. I mean, all of the accounts do say he was completely and utterly besotted with her, much more than her and him.
Right.
But he was just like not happy when she wasn't around. I think he'd probably had quite a difficult time prior to being king and not been sufficiently exposed to, you know, normal relationships, as, you know, well, a dysfunctional family is wont to do. And he just completely landed on this woman and became completely obsessed with her.
And he was a bit of a dandy figure almost, wasn't he? A bit like the sort of Prince George in Blackadder kind of figure.
Oh, yes.
A bit sort of, you know, completely uninterested in affairs of the state.
Yes.
Wasn't really interested in the sort of stately duties of being a king, was he?
Yeah, well, worse than that, he left all the government papers lying everywhere. So he's sort of getting all these red boxes from the government. And he's supposed to be signing official bills and stuff. And these are secret affairs of state. And he's just like showing everything to Wallace, going, oh, look at this. Look, it's lovely. And should we sign it together? It's like, no, you're the king. And there was also a rumour. Go on.
Well, I was going to say, it's a real problem, isn't it? Because isn't there a rumour that she's had an affair with Ribbentrop, right?
Yes.
Who's like the Nazi ambassador to Britain.
Yes. Yes, he used to send her 17 roses to count. Apparently, that was the number of times they'd shagged.
Right.
So that's romantic.
Isn't it?
Yeah, so Ribbentrop had been charged by Hitler with securing the German-British alliance and, you know, getting Britain on side in his sort of Nazi sort of plan to dominate Europe. And Edward VIII was, you know, a big part of Hitler's hopes. And he was...
Yeah, well...
He was known for slight sort of Nazi sympathies and being liking the vigour and youth of the German leader and the Nazi system.
Now, this should be the scandal, right?
Absolutely.
That we're in the interwar period and he's cavorting with a lady who's also cavorting with the Nazi ambassador.
I know, yeah. That would be the scandal now, wouldn't it? I mean, that was,
wouldn't it?
That wasn't the front of everyone's minds, you know. You know, she was divorced and he was the head of the Church of England. That was the problem. So he carried on being a
Isn't
king.
Isn't that a bit ironic? Like, the problem is she's divorced because he's a head of the Church of England. Doesn't the Church of England only exist because Henry VIII wanted a divorce?
Exactly. That's the whole origin of the Church of England, was a monarch getting a divorce. So he carries on being king. In March, he visited Clyde Bank to inspect the liner, the Queen Mary, named after his mum. Ever been on the Queen Mary, Angela?
Funnily enough, John, I have never been on the Queen Mary. No, have you?
I have been on the Queen Mary. I went to
I
the
thought
United...
you might, otherwise you wouldn't have brought it up, John.
It's just so bizarre that when I was three, we went to America to live and we went on the Queen Mary. It was a five-day
Whoa. Every podcast we do, first it's like, oh, John was in a film with Diana Dawes. That just comes up one day. Now it's like, we went to America to live. What?
For about 6 months. Yeah, my dad...
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was only three, so I was very little. But we went, fancy going on the Queen Mary. We went on a line. I'm so old that the first time I went to America, it was on a ship.
Wow.
And every morning you had my mum said, it's great, every day we've got an extra hour's line because of the time change. And
journey take?
It was 5 days.
Wow.
It's amazing, isn't it? And we took a whole day just to get into New York Harbour, apparently. I don't remember that bit. So the Queen Mary is being built. Ready for John to go to America 30 years later. Apparently, he was very sympathetic to the shipyard workers, Edward VIII, and he also visited South Wales during his brief reign. And the poverty of his mining valleys, he was shocked by it, and he said, something must be done. That was like scandalous.
So he had
political...
some sort of...
Yeah.
Well, I suppose it would be very rare for the king to actually see working class people, right? Yes. So when they do see them, they go, oh, this is terrible.
It would have been. If he'd seen my childhood in Maidenhead, Angela, he would have been shocked.
Well, absolutely.
But this was reported at the time like an all-out attack on the Tory government, and it, you know, didn't please Baldwin at all.
Baldwin wasn't happy then, yeah.
Yeah, and he's going to need Baldwin later, so probably a bad move, mate. So Edward starts to include... Wallis Simpson in her official events. He elevated her position above the Prime Minister's wife in a table plan.
What, John?
Oh, no, you fainted. Andrew's fainted, everyone.
Let me get my head around this, John. Let me get my head around this, right? Because you've got the Nazis bombing Spanish Republicans, but forget about that. Oh, I've just thrown a pen across the room.
We're not surprised, Angela. I'm not surprised.
Forget about that. He elevated Wallis Simpson above the Prime Minister's wife in the table plan.
I know. Can you imagine it?
As somebody who is currently planning a wedding, I understand the significance of this.
Yeah, big deal.
Big deal.
So then in July, basically the government are going, this is a nightmare. This bloke is a nightmare. He's not interested in the affairs of state at all. Mm-hmm. He is seeing this woman. We are in a sort of arms race with Nazi Germany, and she is a very close friends with Ribbentrop. And in July, there's a very interesting subplot.
Ooh, what happens in July?
Somebody tries to kill the king. Edward was riding with the guards, as you do.
Mm-hmm.
When this nervous, agitated man pushed his way through the crowd and under a newspaper, he raised this loaded revolver. And a woman saw him raise this gun. And in an instinctive move, she shoved his arm away. He dropped the gun and it went under the king's horse.
Do you know, right? If that had been a woman, a man who'd done that, he'd be this hero, saved the king. What an amazing man. Do we know this woman's name? This woman, like, stopped the king being assassinated. Do we even know her name?
Well, I didn't even bother writing it down, Angela, because it was a woman. If it had been a man, I would have written it down in my notes. But I didn't see
exactly.
I didn't write the name down. I wrote down the name of the man who nearly assassinated the king.
But what's the name of the woman in the book?
I think it might have been. I can't remember. Yeah.
Oh, in that case, John, it's on you. Okay, that's fine. I thought maybe history just hadn't recorded the name of the woman.
Well, actually, they're policemen.
But it turns out it's just you.
It's just me.
That's all right then.
You know, I've written her out of history. She is just a small bit part player and she doesn't get a name. She's
it's
just
history,
the woman.
Not herstory, isn't it, John?
Oh, that's strong. That's powerful.
Eh?
So anyway, the assassin.
Anyway, this guy that nearly killed him, yeah.
The assassin, the bad guy. I've got his name written down here.
Yeah.
George McMahon. That was his name. He was like a sort of slightly deranged Scottish former journalist.
Now, well, there's sort of theories about him, aren't
yes,
there?
Yes, tell us the theories about him.
So he claimed to be an MI5 informer. So he claimed that he had told Special Branch of his intention to kill the king.
Yes.
So the theory was that intelligence would be there and apprehend him. So whoever had ordered him to kill the king, he would be arrested and intercepted and they would eventually be caught. But yeah. There's a lot of controversy over whether that's true or not, isn't
well,
there?
Well, the speculation is that the Home Secretary knew about it.
Right.
He might have been given his gun by the Italian embassy, which is weird, because there were forces within the Italian embassy that didn't want his friendship with Hitler to develop. This is all highly sort of, you know, bloke in the pub told me, I read it on the internet type speculation.
Yeah.
But there was a theory that there were forces within the government and MI5 that thought if this maverick bloke is going to kill the king, that might be quite convenient. We might just let him get on with it. And even though we're not conspiring ourselves, we do know about it, but we don't know about it.
We're just going to...
Yeah, so that's the sort of conspiracy theory. I'm not sure about myself, but he was only charged on a minor upsetting the king in a nasty way or something, some small law. He wasn't charged with attempted the king's
life.
He only
got like a year in prison, didn't he?
He got a year, yeah. And he was charged by the Attorney General, no less. So, yeah, after a year
it's all a bit dodgy, isn't it? You try and kill the king and you get a year in prison. That doesn't seem...
Yeah, and then he came out and just went back to the bottle and wrote lots of nutty letters to Oswald Mosley. So
he sounds like a very stable guy.
Yeah. So, I mean, if he had pulled the trigger, we'd remember Edward VIII as the assassinated king.
Mm.
But that story made the papers and made the news footage in the cinema, and when it was shown, spontaneous singing of the national anthem in the cinema.
Mm.
Not something you hear so much these days, is it? Spontaneous singing of the national anthem after the sort of, you know, after the hot dog ads.
It's not very British, is it?
No.
To sort of spontaneously sing. We're not very spontaneously singing. But he was liked by the people, right, Edward?
Well, at this point, I think, yeah, everyone thought he's a new king and he's, you know, dashing and all that. But all that summer, he's hanging out with his new girlfriend. He went on a cruise in the Eastern Mediterranean. And all this time, the American and European press was filled with stories and pictures. But not a word of this was in the English papers.
So this is really something we can't quite get our heads around now, isn't it? Because, you know, if something's in the papers in America, we know about it.
Absolutely.
Because
yeah.
The internet, etc. But the fact is, it wasn't in the British papers, was it, this affair he was having with Wallace Simpson? So the British people didn't know about it. He was just their king.
Well, everyone in Westminster and Fleet Street knew about it. All the sort of powers that be, the church, the civil servants, the journalists, they all knew. But the two big newspaper barons of the day, Beaverbrook and Rothermere, they agreed that the king's privacy would be respected.
That never happened today, would it?
No.
Well, actually, it probably would. The Queen's probably is respected more than other royals,
maybe.
Yeah, there
are one or two stories that don't get out that you sort of hear from journalists. That's still a thing.
Yeah. But you have British people living abroad, right?
Yeah.
They were reading these stories and appalled by them and would like write home and tell their relatives, what's the king up to? And they, I suppose their relatives would be like, what are you talking about?
I know. It's unimaginable now with Twitter and the internet. But even if the foreign papers came in at the ports, they were sort of confiscated and put aside. News agents wouldn't put them out, you know. So some news agents knew about it, but like, I'm not putting that out in the public. So there's a sort of general conspiracy of silence. It was called the Great Silence, actually. So Edward continues to put her before everything. When she came up to stay in Balmoral, he was supposed to be opening the local hospital, but he cancelled it so he could pick her up from the station. And
that seems reasonable.
Yeah, he pretended he was still grieving for his dad. But word of this got out and the local Scots were furious about this. And rumours were growing and indignation growing. And the Archbishop of Canterbury was appalled, as was Baldwin and the cabinet, at his lack of responsibility and devotion to duty. Meanwhile, Mrs. Simpson was trying to divorce her second husband.
So she's still married at this point.
She's still married to Ernest with a goofy name. Divorce was so primitive back then that the only way to do it was to have solid evidence of adultery. And so if a couple wanted to get divorced, they had to stage this. They had to sort of like book into a hotel and have photographs of the woman coming out of the room and witnesses signing statements. And this was a farce that people had to embrace just to get divorced legally.
So would it have to be the man committing adultery then?
Well, Mr. Simpson was very obliging about all this. So he was prepared to book himself into the Hotel de Paris in Bray, where I used to go to youth club when I was a kid. Not the Hotel de Paris, Bray.
Is that where the Fat Duck is?
Yes, down there.
Yeah,
near Maidenhead it is. And he was pretending to have an affair and making sure witnesses saw him and everything. And this evidence would be submitted to court to allow the divorce to happen.
That, but of course, that in itself is breaking the law, right? That collusion.
Yes.
To do that. And she had vowed that she hadn't been adulterous, whereas everyone knew that she had. So that's perjury, right?
Yeah, she was in court. To try and make it more quiet, they put it in Suffolk. They put it up at Ipswich Crown Court. She booked into an address in Felixstowe to pretend she lived up that way. And this judge didn't know what was coming. They hoped to avoid media interest, but of course there was loads of media interest. The poor judge was swamped with newspaper reporters. One cameraman jumped on her car to get a pic. A policeman obligingly smashed his camera.
So what I don't understand, if the newspapers weren't printing this stuff, why are they...
Well, there's the American reporters there. There's,
I see.
International,
yeah,
but
so,
also...
it's only the British reporters, isn't
yeah,
it?
Aren't? Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
The king had been in contact with the chief constable of Suffolk. Which is very inappropriate for the king to ring up saying, could you just make sure that, my girlfriend doesn't get any trouble at the court when she gets divorced. So the journalists, they were writing this stuff down and they were taking pictures, but they were pleading with their editors to break what was called the great silence. They were going, somebody...
Oh, for the love of God, will someone invent Twitter?
Exactly, that's what they're saying. So the secret could not hold forever. It's going to burst soon. And this dam of gossip and innuendo, that might be a time to take a break. To sing the national anthem and pray for the king and them.
Hello, welcome back. You are listening to the We Are History podcast and we are talking about the 1936 abdication crisis. So we've got King Edward has been open about his intention to marry the American divorcee Wallis Simpson.
And he continues to tell everyone how wonderful she was. Thankfully, leaving out the details of their sex life and the erotic techniques she'd learned in China. He confided to Churchill, who was the senior politician who seemed to have the most support for Edward at this time.
What was Churchill at that point?
He was actually slightly in the wilderness then. So he was like this very famous, he was a sort of Boris Johnson of his day, not in the cabinet, sort of slightly winding everyone up with his bellicose sort of warmongering. And everyone's going, no, we're not going to fight Hitler. Shut up about fighting Hitler. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And there was this emergence, because you had this sort of weird... This is how what a big deal it was. They started to worry about the emergence of a king's party, a whole party in parliament that would support the king if it came to the idea that he might have to abdicate. So Lord Beaverbrook...
Right, sort of single issue.
Yeah, yeah, sort of like a Brexit party and supporting the king.
Yeah.
Beaverbrook, who was the who owned half the papers, he was very much using this stick to beat Baldwin. And any politicians on the king's side, that might include Oswald Mosley.
It's not a good look now, is it, to have Oswald Mosley
on
your side?
I know, I know. So if the government fell because of the king's action, the king himself, of course, could invite someone to form a government. So he might have invited,
Mosley,
I don't think Mosley was in parliament, but he could have invited some dodgy MPs to form a government, put Mosley in the cabinet, and we could have had a sort of similar government to Spain and Germany and Italy.
Wow, that's serious.
Yeah.
Constitutional consequences, isn't it? And,
yeah.
You, like you said before, Hitler and Ribbentrop, he's the best friend they've got in England, Edward, isn't he? He's sympathetic to the Nazi cause at this point.
Yeah.
If the government fell, it would trigger an election where the main issue is the king's marriage.
Imagine
not fascism or communism or any of the other things going on in the world.
Yeah, and this all the time this is going on. They're all debating this. Still no one in the country knows. So there's like a sort of twin... consciousness in Britain, whereas ordinary people are struggling to pay the bills and dad's got no work, and in the corridors of power all they're consumed with is what's going to happen about the king's marriage. He's openly talking about planning to marry this woman. This can't come to pass. But some people did know about it, so as a crisis grew, Threats were made to Wallis Simpson's life. She had to move out of her home and she was starting to wonder whether it's all worth it.
Yeah, she was never that into him, was she? As he was into her.
I know. She tried to break it off a couple of times, actually, but he wasn't having it.
God, how hard must it be to dump a king?
I know, it is, especially, yeah. He was basically a stalker, I think. She went to Cannes to stay with friends. And even though the divorce had been granted in Ipswich, the decree absolute would still take 6 months. So the king couldn't marry her until mid-37. And he wanted that before his coronation, so she would be queen.
Yeah.
The church and parliament were like, ain't gonna happen. So the press were desperate to break this story. And finally, they found this opportunity. This was December 36. The Bishop of Bradford, not one of the big bishops.
Not one of the big ones, is he? There's no Archbishop of Canterbury, is he?
Canterbury, York, Bradford. They're the big three, aren't they? But he gave this big sanctimonious sermon, you know, about the duty of the king. And eventually he said, may the grace of God be with the king at this difficult time. And all the hacks were like, well, he's gone public. That's it. He said... the king at this difficult time, we can print the story. And suddenly it's in the public domain. They spilt the beans and all the newspapers are absolutely full of it.
Wow. Just because a bishop mentioned it in his sermon.
May the grace
of God. If a bishop mentioned it in his sermon today, only four people would hear it, wouldn't they?
That's quite funny, isn't it?
It's like, it's like starting in the public domain if a bishop says something in a sermon anymore, is it?
Absolutely. So then suddenly the dam burst and all the papers were full of nothing else. It was December. People were singing, Hark the Herald Angels Sing, Mrs. Simpson Stole Our King. Satire was early days then, Angela.
Oh, dear. Put that on Have I Got News For You, John.
Put in the Now Show. Eh? they're friends of mine. She became vilified as this gold digger, a scheming social climber. As I say, Angela, this was a time when women got...
it was obviously all her fault.
It was her fault. This was a time, Angela, when women got blamed first, when men talked over women all the time and explained things to them.
That never happened today.
I haven't finished talking, Angela. That's when women had things explained. So MI5 was bugging the king and his telephone calls to Cannes. You can imagine that. Lovey-dovey phone calls.
I bet they've got nothing on the old Charles and Camilla phone calls they bugged a few years later. But
I think theirs was probably just, you hang up. No, you hang up first. No. But the press were onto her in the south of France. One time she had to climb through the bathroom window of a restaurant to escape the hacks.
Jeez. So back home,
yeah,
the king's made it pretty clear to Stanley Baldwin, Prime Minister, that he will abdicate if he's not going to be allowed to marry Wallis. Right. That's much more important to him than being king, right? Because he's not really that into all the stately stuff, is he? He's no Queen Elizabeth II, John.
Oh, she's wonderful, isn't she? God bless her.
So Baldwin begged him, pleaded with him, threatened him. Everyone begged him. The entire establishment didn't want him to abdicate because it's not a good look, is it?
No, the rest of the royal family were like, you can't do this. Mary was appalled, his mum. You know.
Yeah, I bet. And the British people, though, once they heard about it, were a bit like, he's in love with a lady, let him marry her.
With the lady.
Like we are with Harry, but you know what I mean? It's like, they're just people, guys.
Yeah, yeah, it did actually split people. I mean, I think it was one of those generational divides where the older people were like, well, it's his duty is to the throne. And the young people were like, shit happens, yeah. People get divorced. Let's just all have free love and sex. And it's like the 60s. Oh, no,
was it also like a class divide as well, I suppose? Because we know from talking about the Victorians, you know, we have this idea of the kind of late 1800s, early 1900s of all being very buttoned up and prudish and whatever. But actually, it was just the middle classes, right?
Absolutely.
Or the middle and upper classes. The working classes were much more have at it. Marriage wasn't as accessible or important to the working classes.
Yeah. There were people who were outraged. There were people like, oh, well, there's more important things to worry about.
Mm.
And Mrs. Simpson was by now a national pariah. She was getting death threats. And she announced she was breaking off with the king. She said, I'm not having it. And, he wouldn't let her go, as we say.
Which essentially is, you know, kidnap almost.
Well, she was down in France,
forcing someone
to
be in a relationship that they don't want to be in.
Baldwin kept meeting with the king, but he wouldn't be dissuaded. Apparently, there's a little account of them at Fort Belvedere having a little cry together.
The king
situation.
And Stanley Baldwin?
The king and the prime minister had a little weep together. Jeez. And they prayed together. Good drama, isn't it?
Probably didn't happen though, did it?
I don't know. So the government were drawing up an actual abdication bill. And weirdly, that would need royal assent from the king, but then he wouldn't be king. So this is quite meta politics. It's like...
Oh, right. So he would have to sign the bill as king that made him
not
no
king.
Longer
Oh, I haven't put a full stop on that. Yeah, no, you can't touch it now. You're not king anymore.
Or are you? Because you didn't put the full stop. Oh.
Yeah, exactly. Are you? It's like...
Schrodinger's king.
Schrodinger's king is what he would have been. Yeah, and also a special bill to rush through the divorce. They didn't have to wait till 37. But the cabinet couldn't countenance that. That was going too far. So that bill was scrapped.
So there's just a lot of embarrassing haggling at the moment, isn't there? About money.
Yeah.
Who's going to pay him if he abdicates? You know, taxpayers not paying it. Will he get his income from the rest of the royal family?
Absolutely, yeah. So we said at the beginning, Wallace said you can't be too rich or too thin. She was in the prospect of being stuck with a bitter ex-monarch with no income. And she wasn't worried about that. And he was desperate.
So the chances are Wallace Simpson, this inverted commas gold digger, was going to end up with an impoverished ex-king.
Yeah, I know. So the abdication bill went through. And bear in mind, this had the scale of the shock for the ordinary British newspaper reader going along perfectly happily all through 1936 with the new king. Something like December the 4th, I think it was, it broke. Or very early in December, the story broke. December the 11th, he ceased to be king. So that this was just all in
within
one
week.
In 1 week, we've got a king, we haven't got a king.
Yeah.
And it was the shortest reign of any monarch since Lady Jane Grey. And that one doesn't really count anyway. She never gets on the list, does she? Another woman written out, Angela.
Yeah.
Another example of what I've been telling
time,
you
mate.
About. Of what I've been educating you about.
Thank you for mansplaining women in history to me there, John. Appreciate that.
He signed the abdication bill. He ceased to be king. He got straight on the boat to France late that night. And his servants, in fact, were furious. They felt abandoned. One of them told him his name was, your name is Mud. M-U-D, they said to him.
I suppose for them, you know, 1 minute they're servant to the king. That's got quite a lot of cachet. The next minute they're not.
He was allowed to do a very serious broadcast to the nation about his love for this woman. Frankly, I think it might have been a bit better with that sort of sound effects of Steve Wright in the afternoon. So I have not been allowed to marry the woman I love. Wah, wah,
boop.
But we will now get married. Hooray! But again, radio, less fun in those days.
It's no now show, John.
It's no now show.
And so his younger brother, George the... Hang on, four, fifth, six, six.
Angela, in my notes, I've written in Latin numerals. And she's going, V1? What's his name? V?
One,
no,
v,
that's George,
George
the V.
Vi? What?
And yep, George VI overcame, as you've seen, you will have seen the film, The King's Speech. He overcame his stammer to single-handedly win the Second World War.
That's exactly what happened. And of course, that's how we end up with Queen Elizabeth that we've got now. She wasn't ever expecting her father to be king or for her to be queen. So suddenly her father's king, which makes her next in line for the throne.
Absolutely. I mean, to be fair, Edward didn't have any children. Wallace was, I think, in her 40s. So they might not have had children. It wasn't expected they would have children. In fact, they never did. Mm. So our queen would have been queen eventually.
Oh, yeah.
But that wouldn't have been till the 1970s was when he died. He died in 1972.
Right.
So just long enough to hear David Bowie's Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars. So I'm happy for him for that.
Is that what did for him in the end?
But yeah, that cast a long shadow over the royal family and a lot of bitterness from the rest of the royal family towards Edward. Queen Mother, you know, our current Queen's mother, Queen Elizabeth, Queen Mother, particularly felt angry that her husband had been forced into this role. He was a reluctant king. But, and I think the sense of duty in the current Queen comes very much from this time when one of her predecessors did not fulfil his duty. Hence, I think, the horror Prince Harry today withdrawing from being a devoted public servant like his uncle Prince Andrew had been.
Don't get me started.
Don't get me started, she said.
Don't get me started
on
that one.
You hate Pizza Express at Woking, don't you? Why would he go there? Because I think what we also need to remember is the time of putting yourself first back then was, the idea of the individual versus the state, the relationship was very different. Mm. So what Harry has done, we all go, he doesn't want to be king anymore. Why should, well, not king, he doesn't want to be a prince anymore. Why shouldn't he be? Today, that seems less radical. But back then, that was very not much the thing you did.
If you were born into duty, you had to serve your duty.
The following year, living in exile now.
So they're living in Paris, right?
Paris, yeah. They lived there. They met that nice Mr. Hitler, had the photo taken with him.
Oh, good. That's
a bit of PR. They're PR people going, I tell you what would look good, guys. This will look good. just for posterity, a picture of you bowing and shaking with Hitler. That's going to be great.
Hello, I'm Ros Taylor with news of Oh God, What Now? The politics podcast that's never going to leave its voter ID at home. On Friday's show, it's 6 months until the US election and Donald Trump is stuck sitting on trial in a New York courthouse. Is he bulletproof or can Joe Biden turn around the polls? In the second half, it's local elections week, but we've steadily taken power away from local authorities. What if we gave it back? And in the extra bit for supporters, is there a right level of ruthlessness in politics? That's Oh God, What Now? With me, Ros Taylor, Raphael Baer, Hannah Fern, guest Nikki McCann-Ramirez, out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
He was always obviously too sympathetic to Hitler. And so when war broke out, they were a bit worried about him being in Europe. Because he was in France, they go, okay, better move to Spain. Well, Spain's a bit fascist as well, so they moved to Portugal. Eventually, Churchill goes, I tell you what, we'll make him the governor of the Bahamas, keep him far away from Europe as possible.
And John, I think, you know, it's always good, isn't it, to have an out-and-out racist in charge of a Caribbean colony.
Absolutely.
That is what you want.
Yeah.
Because the thought was, wasn't it, that if Hitler has successfully invaded, which was on the cards...
Yeah.
He might have put Edward back on the throne as a sort of puppet king.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Because he had sympathies with him.
Yeah, so the brand of Edward VIII sort of took a big dent in the war because of his sympathies to Hitler.
No.
So Edward and Mrs. Simpson lived out their lives in Paris as the Duke and Duchess of Windsor. This was their made-up title. And if he'd stayed on the throne, as you say, he would have been the king when I was a kid. Mm. Our queen would have probably come to the throne in 72. It means the Jubilee would have been next year.
Yeah, it does seem mad now, doesn't it, that this was such a... storm in a teacup, as far
Absolutely.
As we're concerned now, this thing. But it was such a big thing. When we look back, so Spanish Civil War broken out. There were millions of unemployed in Britain. And it was the year the Jarrow Marchers arrived in London. And Westminster ignored their petition.
But right? That's not important.
It suggested
that's not important.
That, well, was the Jarrow Marchers petition ignored because Westminster was too consumed about the fact that the king wanted to marry a divorcee? I mean, that's...
No, it's incredible, isn't it? I mean, I think the Jarrow Marchers were ignored because Parliament was full of a load of snobs who didn't care about unemployment in the North East.
Yeah.
But the love life of the king and what it meant for his position of defender of the faith, his position at the head of an empire, all of that would become meaningless in a decade or two anyway. The empire was going to disintegrate, you know, after the war. But as we say, you can't marry a divorcee if you're head of the Church of England because Henry VIII would never have had it.
So mad. The whole thing is so mad.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. In 1992, was it 92? The Annus Horribilis. We had Charles divorce, Anne divorce, Prince Andrew divorce.
They all divorced, didn't they? Yeah.
Charles will be the defender of the faith, but also be divorced himself and married to a divorced woman. It's completely acceptable now.
Wow.
Lots of dramatisations, of course, and period costume dramas about, you know, Edward and Mrs. Simpson. It's such a sort of perfect,
romantic, with a capital R story, isn't it? Sort of.
Yeah. Sadly, I would say too few people have seen Madonna's film W.E. from 2011, in which Madonna directed Wallace Simpson gyrating to Pretty Vacant by the Sex Pistols with a young African tribesman. Look it up on YouTube.
There's so much wrong with that.
It's called artistic license, Angela.
Is it, John? amazing. But I'm going to watch that. That sounds sort of awesome.
It is really terrible. You know, we always think, oh, people were the same in the olden days. Things aren't so different. But I think what this crisis shows us is that values were so different, you know, less than a century ago. The things that were considered important were utterly trivial. And the things that deeply shocked members of the establishment will be greeted with a casual shrug today. And so some of the things that we hold as absolutely sacrosanct now might be laughable in a century's time. Who knows?
Absolutely.
Something to think about there, listeners.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The Harry and Meghan situation. Obviously, it's mad in the press, but it's not, you know, it's not affecting affairs of state.
No, it doesn't affect anyone's quality of life. It's like, oh, I'm going down the food bank, but I'm really more worried about, you know, Harry and Meghan. So I think if you can afford to worry about Harry and Meghan, it means haven't got enough to worry about.
Absolutely.
And same with Edward and Mrs. Simpson. On that political cheap point, I think we should crash out. We should abdicate from this episode. And thank you to the author of The Crown and Crisis, Alexander Larman. Your book was a good read. And it'll be out in paperback this year, folks. So get it from a proper independent bookshop and enjoy the good read.
Thank you to Spike, our producer. Thank you to all of you for listening. Don't forget to give us a 5-star review on Apple, iTunes, podcasty thingies.
Lots of nice comments there recently. People writing nice things, saying how much they
enjoyed. I haven't looked at it for a while.
Oh, this really helps me on my long walks. And I'm enjoying this. It's helping me through lockdown. And
lovely.
John O'Farrell is obviously a posh, snobby bloke. And Angela's my favourite.
Well, you know, you can't help what people think, John, can you?
That's all from wearehistory.pod.net. We'll catch you next week. with another exciting instalment of British history, and we're rapidly running out of bits of history to cover. We've done some. Do you know, last week, I forgot to mention, Angela, last week was our 50th episode. We didn't do anything about it.
And we didn't even notice, did we?
We didn't notice, no. So this is our 51st. It's a special one today. It's our 51st We Are History. Let's jump out of this episode before we outstay our welcome. See you next week, guys.
See ya. Bye.
Bye.